Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast Showgram. Mike Ciano, along with the chocolate-frosted, sprinkled, donut-eating Corey Stats-Schwartz. You can follow Corey on Twitter, at Schwartztops, at the Cap 23. You got Fred Zinke, at Fred Zinke MLB.
Yep.
I got it right.
Say it with more confidence.
At Fred Zinke MLB.
There you go.
At Zach, what confused me is Goose is just his first name.
Right.
So I get confused, but they both have MLB at the end.
But the Goose is kind of, you know, he's kind of a brand. You know? I mean, Fred's a guy, and Fred, listen, Fred's a rock star in his business. Mm-hmm. The Goose is a thing, you know what I'm saying? He's an item.
Check out Fred Zinke each day, writing about DraftKings and playing the DFS, Daily Fantasy Game stuff. Is that what the S stands for, stuff?
Daily Fantasy Stuff. Yep, that's it.
But yeah, he's doing a great job with that. In fact, you know, I've been reading it. I haven't been playing the past couple of days just because I'm clueless and forget. But I did play every day for the first like 6 days of the season, and I was reading his stuff and remembering what, you know, I took some of his advice. Some of it I didn't. I have confidence in myself to, spend $3 or $1 or $2 or $5, whatever it may be. But he's been doing pretty good.
You know, our guy Zach Finkelstein, who runs our editorial fantasy editorial content,
I do know the
thing, is really getting involved in DFS and starting to make a little mark for himself there.
Oh, good.
At least making a little mark in his wallet.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Was he up like 2-3 million?
He's up. Listen, here's the thing: you're not losing if you're winning.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I also play the golf. I've actually played UFC on it. That was fun. Because you're at a bar watching it at, you know, on a Saturday. You know, the big pay-per-view event I did one time. That was kind of fun. I was out of it within three fights, but it was still fun. Anyway, so check out Fred Zinke's stuff and all the DraftKings stuff we have on MLB.com. And don't forget the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. And, of course, the general account at fantasy411. You'll get your two start pitchers on Friday from the Goose. You get your pitcher ditch every day on the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. A lot of stuff to go over here, Mr. Schwartz. We're going to look at some news and notes. We're going to look at some guys that, as of Tuesday's games, not Wednesday's games, as of Tuesday's games, are 2-0. In fact, one guy on here is now 3-0. And guess what?
Who's that?
He's not a starting pitcher.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
a vulture. He's a vulture.
I feel like Mike Dunn had like 11 wins last
yeah,
year.
Yeah. So we'll go over that, and then, of course, we'll get to the Twitter machine questions. Okay. We have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we should be able to get all of this stuff in. No particular order, just the way I copy and paste it in the email, and away we go. Yasmani Tomas called up yesterday. Now, I happened to be lucky enough to be watching MLB Network as he made his first at-bat, and they did a live look-in. And Harold Reynolds said, yeah, he still looks pretty soft to me. And he didn't mean, you know, ability-wise. He yeah. meant physically.
And
basically, he looks like me, Yasmani Tomas, right now.
And look, you know, I'm not a scout. I'll say that every single time.
But you play one on the Fantasy 411.
I do. I saw him in spring training a couple of times, mm-hmm. and to my untrained eye, it looked like he had a very slow bat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that he got brought up and I knew that he pinch hit last night, I said, I predict a lazy fly ball to right field.
You were not even close.
He grounded out
the
second.
A lazy ground out the second.
But that's my point. He hit it to the right side right. of the field. You know, we haven't seen the evidence yet, at least in extremely small sample sizes, that this guy can hit hard major league stuff.
Right.
He was, 0-for-8 at Reno. You know, it's kind of an odd situation. You know, the Diamondbacks already have four outfielders they're having a hard time finding playing time for because Ender Inciarte has come out with such a hot start.
He's now starting to batting leadoff.
Starting to steal at bats from AJ Pollock, from Mark Trumbo, from David Peralta. So they don't really seem to have playing time in the outfield. They're already rotating their infielders. Jake Lamb playing third against all righties, and then Aaron Hill, Chris Owings, and Nick Ahmed splitting time between second and short, and Hill's playing a little bit of third as well. So it's not that these are all great players, but they presumably have guys to take the at bats.
Sure.
They sent Tomas down because they wanted him to get at bats. So what do? Call him up and make him a bench bat.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of an odd situation. So I'm sure they have a plan. I mean, you know, Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart forget more about baseball on a bad day than I'll know my whole life. But it's an odd situation. All that being said, you know, this is a fantasy show. I'd be picking up Tomas in deep leagues, particularly if it's a keeper or dynasty format, and you can wait to see how things play out.
Yep.
But if I'm in a 12-team mixed league or even, you know, any type of league with daily transactions, he's not even on the radar right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so interesting. You know, a surprising announcement, and then he doesn't even start. They don't send down a bat. They send down a pitcher. So a little weird situation going on. They showed a great shot while he was up of La Russa up in the, you know, the
Ivory Tower.
The Ivory Tower, sure, we can call it that. And, you know, he's watching baseball, and he's focused and all that. But I'm just thinking he's looking at a team. He's like, I don't know if this is, well, I mean, listen, it's a work in progress. They don't have to win the World Series this year. But then all of a sudden he lifts up his hand and puts both of his hands up near his mouth, and he's got, as Harold said, brass knuckles on.
Brass knuckles.
He's like, man, those are brass knuckles.
Yeah.
I think it was Harold. It was either Harold or Eric Burns, but it was pretty funny. So anyway, so that's your Tomas update. Closer follies. Joaquin Soria must have listened to the last podcast where I said I didn't have much faith in him because he is absolutely killing it.
And I think I said he's got a good chance of keeping the job.
But.
Yeah, me.
But wait, not so fast, my friend, as Coach Corso would say. Osmus came out yesterday and said, Nathan, pretty decent chance Nathan gets his job back when he returns. Mm-hmm. In the midst of Soria being red hot. Kind of odd.
Remember, when it comes to closer turnover, two things have to happen. One guy's got to take it back, and the other guy's got to give it back. If Soria, he's given up one run in his first six outings. He's 4-for-4 for saves. He's not walking it. Hasn't walked anybody yet. That's his thing. I think last year he had a 48-6 strikeout to walk ratio, which is like league average for closers these days.
Yeah,
but he got it done. So let's say Nathan's. You know, I don't think Nathan is throwing yet. I think he said he's feeling better, but I don't believe he's throwing. If I read correctly, you know, it could take Nathan a month or 6 weeks or longer to come back. If Soria's 19 out of 20 for saves or whatever by then,
very true, very fair.
Well, you know, we're gonna work Joe in. You know, we're going to work Joe back up to game speed and, you know, use him in middle and setup roles for first. And then a week or 2 weeks later, if Soria's still getting it done, well, you know, Soria's doing great. We don't want to disrupt anything. So we're just going to keep going like we are now. But it's good to know we have it's good to know we have a guy like Joe who can step in if needed. But the way Soria's going, we don't want to mix things up too much.
All right.
Yeah. Listen, if Soria keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to keep the job. That's not to say Nathan won't come back and pitch effectively. He might. But they're not just going to say, Joe Nathan off the DL, boom, slide right back into the closer role. Maybe if it were a two-week thing.
Right.
But you're talking 4-6 weeks, maybe longer. Uh-uh. Mm-mm. Not buy it. Not going to do it.
Bad job out of me. Good job out of you.
But, you know, again, it's Osmus said what he said. And you're entirely right to put a lot of weight in that. But you got to read the tea leaves, man.
Liars!
What do you always say? What do you
They're
always
liars.
Say? Liars! You didn't throw a shoe at him, but you got to be a little skeptical.
The bringer of rain gets moved up in the lineup and brings some rain. Josh Donaldson has a nice day, very nice day, on Wednesday after getting moved up in the lineup. So nice to see him wake up. Heavily invested in player this year. What, at worst, second rounder, right?
I got him for 31 in Tout Wars.
Ooh,
I chased.
That's real money.
That's real money.
So what do you think?
I like it. You know, it's funny. I did. I was on Sirius XM with Ray Flowers and Kyle Elfrink the other night. Ray and I are in Tout Wars, and we always seem to be bidding on the same players. But originally they started out with Russell Martin as their number two hitter. He has one hit so far this season. He thinks Chris Carter's having a good year. That's how bad a year Russell Martin is having so far. I didn't like Martin hitting two because that made them very right-handed heavy at the top. And outside of last year when he had that huge year for the Pirates, Martin hasn't been a great OBP guy. So they drop Martin down in the lineup. They bring up Dalton Pompey. I actually kind of like that because it gave them a little bit more left-right. He looks like a decent OBP guy. I don't think he's got a hit since he's been in the two-hole. So they drop him down. They move Donaldson up.
I think he homered yesterday.
Right. Donaldson, on the other hand, has, you know, his first 2 years as an everyday player, first two full seasons, has shown very good OBP skills, the ability to take a walk, naturally goes 3-for-5. So the only other guy in that lineup who's hitting, besides Reyes, is Devon Travis, the rookie second baseman, who they seem comfortable having him in the nine hole, sort of that second leadoff hitter. So I think Donaldson could get an extended look in the two hole, and if Reyes keeps producing and Travis keeps producing, this will be good for his value. You know, people think, oh, you know, two-hole, you're going to lose RBI opportunities. Yeah, but in an AL lineup, you're turning over that lineup, and you're getting more at-bats.
Yep,
and Donaldson's a guy who's probably going to play, knock on wood, 155, 158 games this year.
Yep.
That's a ton of playing time. So I like this move for him. You know, hopefully getting Reyes on base, getting him on base, that'll help Bautista and Encarnacion get going. You'll start seeing some runs.
All right. Brian Dozier, how much did he go for in town? Any recollection?
I don't remember exactly, but it was a – I thought it was a pretty fair price based on, you know,
20s, low 20s,
a middle
20s.
Infielder. I think he might have gone for 18 or 19.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, 19 is a magic number, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. That big 9. 29 is a magic number, too. 9's a magic number.
29. I'm still 39. So
yeah, there you go.
That's a magic
there
number,
you go.
Too.
Literally, it's a magic
number. I'm going to keep doing it until I get it right.
He got moved to the cleanup spot in the Twins locations lineup.
So. And that was odd because he was one of the top base, you know, table setters in baseball last year. But the Twins, they don't have anybody who's hitting right now for the most part. You know, I like Danny Santana, who was a revelation last year, but it was a lot of batting average on balls in play driving that. He hasn't been as lucky this year. He's not setting the table. You know, Maurer looks like a two or three hitter that, you know, they have him setting the table up there, but they don't really have anybody else who's hitting. So ultimately, you got to try something, but I don't see how putting Torrey Hunter in the two holes is the solution because this is a guy who doesn't walk anymore.
He's a veteran.
Interesting thing about Dozier, last year, I don't know, he drew 80, 90 walks. He has zero walks this year. So they're just looking for a formula right now, and I guess you talk about, you know, the Blue Jays and the Twins and the Astros are reshuffling. Jed Lowrie is up to the three spot now, and they're trying to get Gattis and Carter going.
Yep.
You know, teams are going to tinker a little bit until they start hitting. But I keep thinking about Joe reminded me of this. We talk a lot about sample sizes and variance and all that kind of stuff when we started learning about batting average on balls in play and how long it takes stats to stabilize. Joe referred back to something from like 2001 that he called Voros's Law. For our friend Voris McCracken, which basically says anything can happen in 60 at-bats. Any player can do anything in 60 at-bats. We're not even close to those numbers yet. So, you know, Dozier having no walks, Chris Carter having no homers and no RBIs, it doesn't necessarily mean they're having a bad year because of the amount of variance that can happen in that, amount of time.
We're not even in the second full weekend yet of games. So, So this guy, I know Zach, speaking of Zach Finkelstein, who we referenced earlier in the show, our editorial lead on the fantasy content here at the site.
Editorial leader.
He was very high. We did our fantasy digital magazine and pick, you know, guys to break out or whatever. And I'm pretty sure he picked Steven Sousa Jr. As his guy. Now, we talked about this, I think, like in spring training when we did a podcast. I just missed. I missed on him what a really sick year he had last year, and to me last year on the major league level he was the guy that saved the Zimmerman no hitter with that just unbelievable play.
Play of the year.
Play of the year at end of game. Absolutely. So you know, and then he gets moved in the offseason to Tampa from the Nats. But you know what? You know, I looked close. I said, okay, you know what? Low risk, high reward.
Sousa was an interesting guy to me because you know. Talking with other people in the fantasy industry and whatever, he was on everybody's radar this year. I wouldn't say he was a sleeper. Everybody was looking at him.
Yeah.
He's going to play
but
every
you can
day.
Be a, you can be a breakout guy without being a sleeper.
But you know what I mean? Like
a lot of sleepers don't.
Everybody was paying attention.
Years.
Everybody was talking about.
It's like Jeremy Bonderman that one year, remember?
No, I don't remember that.
I remember it.
But because we're talking about an outfielder now. But that's...
No, Bonderman was so talked about, it was impossible for him to be a discount on draft day.
But here's the thing. This is
I
what
don't
I'm
think
getting
that applies to Sousa.
Everybody was talking about Sousa, and he didn't get any serious heat on draft day. He went for 4, 5, 6. There were, like, I was only in 4 leagues this year, but none of them did he go for, you know, Jacques Peterson money or, you know, pick your other flavor of the month player. Like, everybody liked him. Everybody was on the radar with him. And he still went for $4, $6, $8.
16-team mixed league that I'm in. 16-team mixed, head-to-head. I think I got him as my 5th outfielder.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, and so, if he goes 20-20,
yeah.
That's a 3rd outfielder.
I know. And now he's on my bench right now, but that's okay. My boy Brett Laurie's occupying the utility slot, but I have room for him in utility. And I think he will be there on Monday morning.
I think the only thing...
I'm excited.
I think the one thing that gave me a little bit of skepticism about Sousa and perhaps some other people... I'm saying Sousa, but you say it's Sousa? Like you put salsa on your burrito?
Salsa.
Okay.
Is that salsa, salsa.
He was a AAA repeater. Puma. You know, he's 26 years old. No, he's not a young rookie.
He's not a young buck.
And it reminds me of, you know, I don't want to sully Steven Sousa's name. See, I learned. I don't want to sully his name with the comparison, but it kind of struck me as a little bit of a Brandon Larson thing.
I knew you were going there.
You knew I was going there. Like, if you're in AAA for the third straight year and you're tearing it up, you're supposed to be tearing it up.
Yep.
That's why you know, like, you own AAA because you're there every year. But by the same token, you got to get it done. So this is a guy who could be a 2020 guy this year, and I think people should be justified in feeling good about him.
Two down, 18 to go on the homer side. Those are probably on the bench in most mixed leagues, if not the wire. But we'll see.
I know our friend Jason Collette was very hot on Sousa.
Well, of course,
I know a lot of other
people.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
That's a definition of bias right there. Trevor Bauer's hot start you want to discuss, so go right ahead.
Trevor Bauer, you know, tied for the major league lead with 19 strikeouts right now, took a no-hitter into his second start. He was making Johnny Vandermeer sweat. Bauer's an interesting guy because he throws so many pitches. And that can cut both ways. You know, on one hand, you have a great repertoire. The batter can't sit on one thing, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, if you don't specialize in any one pitch, if you don't have that one go-to pitch, are any of the pitches really good enough? Bauer's repertoire seems to be evolving a little bit this year. He seems to be phasing out the curveball and throwing a lot more of his sliders. And he throws a couple of variations of the slider. He calls one a reverse slider. But he seems to be, scrapping the curveball, but cutting back the curveball in favor of the slider. If he's around the plate with his stuff, he's going to be tough to hit. He has swing and miss stuff of the first order. The thing you just have to be concerned about is, you know, he might be one of these guys that throws 170 innings with 200 strikeouts, but a 135 whip because he's got too much stuff and can't always command it. But I got him for $2 in a keeper league. And the guy next to me laughed at me. He's like, guy gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs in a spring training game. Wasted pick. I was like, okay, all right.
And I now call you dead money.
After two, hey, look, I'm feeling pretty good.
Dead money.
Two starts, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Yeah, this guy was giving me a lot of grief during the draft. It's all good nature, but you know, he was busting my chops, so I had to shoot back a little.
You should give him a dollar and put X's in George Washington's eyes. And when he says, "What's this?" I go, "This is for you. It's like you. It's dead money."
But to be fair, he got Jake McGee for $2.
There you go. Oh, but he gave up two hits in an inning.
Oh, I'm like, Jake McGee, that guy's not even going to pitch until June.
$2.
You wasted $2.
Brandon McCarthy. Who's tied with Trevor Bauer for the strikeout lead? Why, Brandon McCarthy, of course.
If I told you that your major league strikeout leaders would be Trevor Bauer in the AL and Brandon McCarthy in the NL, you would have sent me in for an immediate brain scan.
I would know. My response would be Voros.
McCarthy, 19-1 strikeout to walk rate. That's and awesome. Six homers allowed. The Mariners had four off him the other day. He has a 50% home run to fly ball ratio. That is insane.
That is insane. That's awesome.
But here's the thing.
That's unsustainable, by the way.
Unsustainable, no doubt. That will come down. But here's the thing, Mike. There's always a thing, right? We've said this a lot of times, that people talk about BABIP as being purely a reflection of luck, but we've learned a lot since then, and here's the thing. If I were a Major League Baseball player for a day, the BABIP against me would be 1,000, and the home run to fly ball rate against me would probably be 100%, because I suck. So it's a proxy for luck, but there is some proxy for skill. Now, McCarthy, we talked about early in his career, was a high fastball pitcher, gave up a lot of fly balls, and gave up a lot of home runs. Then with Arizona and Oakland, he started to throw a lot more cutters, a lot more sinkers, and got a lot more ground ball rates, more ground balls, and that's why everybody got excited, and he gradually cut down the home run rate. But since coming to the Yankees last year, he started to throw that high fastball again to change the batter's eye. So I wonder if that is leading to more fly balls and more home runs. This is just a theory, because watching the lowlights, if you will, from the game against Seattle, all of the pitches that got hit out were fastballs, but they weren't what you would call high, like, you know, chest-high fastballs. Nelson Cruz hit two that looked like terrific pitches and just scraped over the fence. So the thing that excites me about McCarthy, 19-1 strikeout to walk rate. Velocity is up again. I think this is a buying opportunity. Absolutely. I think this is a buying opportunity.
And he, you know, if people aren't paying attention and sorting by strikeouts, you know, he could be on the wire or pitch and ditch. And if you happen to sort by home runs given up by a pitcher, well, then he's definitely on the wire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because six will be there.
You know, he and Nelson Cruz bonded
tied.
By home runs right now.
Tied for the lead. Yeah, they're tied for the lead.
I only got him in one league. I just don't understand why everybody was afraid of Nelson Cruz this year. I get the whole thing about the age and the ballpark and blah, 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 blah. It's hard to find 30 home run hitters these days. And to think that you should shy away from Nelson Cruz because he was coming off a career year just doesn't jibe with my thinking. So I only got him in one league, but I was real happy about that.
He's tearing it up. He is ridiculous. Looking at the Royals lineup with Alex Rios, who should be out about month and a half, Jared Dyson got called up. So their lineup last night against Kyle Gibson. So we had a righty. So let's look at it. So this could be their lineup against right-handed hitters, because you could, you know, it's safe to assume that Dyson will definitely do some platooning. Escobar, Moustakas, Kane, Hosmer, Kendrys, my boy. Alex Gordon, Sal Perez, Infante, and then Dyson. What do you think?
Yeah, the Royals have been interesting so far, coming out of the gate so hot. You know,
winless since Jared Dyson has been in the lineup.
0-1 without Alex Rios. They're winless. You know, on one hand, you have some reason for skepticism. I mean, we know Kendrys Morales is a good hitter, and he struggled last year after the late start, but he should hit .280 with 25 homers over a full year. You know, we know some of these guys are good hitters. But on the other hand, you know, is it so shocking to see Salvador Perez and Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar developing, because these are young hitters?
Right.
You know, Moustakas, Ned Yost got laughed at a lot in the first week for batting Moustakas second. You know, it's only 10 days into the season, but Moustakas has been fantastic.
He's been tearing it up. He's been
only 5 strikeouts 10 days into the season. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a guy with a lot of swing and miss over the first couple of years of his major league career, who's made good contact, who's drawn some walks, who's been hit by pitches a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. That adds to the OBP, man.
Yep.
So, you know, Hosmer hasn't been great, but, you know, everybody thought Salvador Perez was going to be, was going to blow up this year or melt down because of all the playing time. He's been out of his mind. So, you know, it's an interesting lineup to watch. I think they'll cool off, but it wouldn't shock me if Moustakas took a step forward or Salvador Perez took a big step forward. I wouldn't say I expected it.
Right.
But would it be the strangest thing in the world if a 25 or 26-year-old hitter got better?
Yeah, you know, and I was high on Moustakas, but not high enough to, well, first of all, you know, the office league here is the league I have him. I got him off the wire, 10-team mix.
10-team.
Another league is NL
that's,
only.
That's so your warm-up league.
Yeah, another league is NL only, so that kind of doesn't count.
You didn't
count
get
for
him
Moustakas.
There.
And then the other league is the 16-team mix, and I don't remember where he went, but I was pretty heavy at corner, so I don't think it mattered. But I did like him a lot, and I was kind of like thinking about reaching for him. Now, listen, I didn't think he was going to be hitting 375 and putting that in the park and doing it and not striking out everything you said. But
I guess he won't hit 375 anyway.
I don't think so either.
Smart.
There's a lot of high, by the way, there's a lot of high averages on that lineup right now. Yeah. It could get painful for
right,
me.
Right.
But yeah, it's nice to see everything you're saying. You know, Sal Perez, Hosmer, and especially Moustakas taking that next step and carrying it over a little bit from last year, just like the whole Royals team is doing. Minus James Shields, plus Kendrys Morales, and obviously minus Billy Butler too. So looking good.
It's the Edinson Volquez effect.
And he's been terrific. Pitch great. Tough loss.
That's been terrific. Terrific two starts.
Chris Bryant. So the update is there is no update, but I think, put it this way, NL Only League Weekly, I have Chris Bryant. I hedged with Mike Olt on draft day for $1 just because, whatever, it was $1, and I knew he was going to start at least for at least a week. I put Bryant in this week. I said, screw it. I'd rather have Chris Bryant get me a zero or maybe get called up on Sunday and homer than Mike Olt for a week.
Mike Olt might go 1-for-17,
Well, and it probably would be a homer, probably a solo homer. But I would be extremely surprised if Chris Bryant, if the world isn't putting Chris Bryant in their lineup on Monday.
You know what? If you're in daily leagues, you're ready to put him in right now. So, if what we all believe is true, it actually happens, that they sent him down for service time considerations, and I'm not going to judge. Let's just call it what it is. If that's the reason he was sent down, then it's been calculated that tomorrow, as we record this, Friday, April 17th, would be the day the Cubs can call him up, keep him up for the rest of the year, and still not lose the year of service time based on that calculation. So tomorrow would be the magic number from a service time standpoint. He's tearing the cover off the ball in AAA. I mean, again, small sample size, but it's not like if he were 1 for 27, they could say, well, we're going to leave him down there and let him get his feet
wet.
I'm good. Yeah. AAA, I'm good. I got you covered.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think he won't come up this weekend.
Well,
you know, Mike Holt's not getting it done.
Nope.
You know, they sent down Baez, and now Tommy La Stella is hurt, so they need Alcantara at second. They've got, you know, a ready-made excuse to bring him up. Hey, we're a little thin on the infield. It's go time.
Yep, absolutely.
So,
get ready.
You know,
and
here's the thing. If you're in a 10-team league right now, you probably want to check the wire and see if he's available
and
pick him up. Because, you know, again, even if he hits 240, he's probably going to hit 25 dingers this year.
Yep.
That's worth a lot.
Does he run at all? He doesn't seem slow.
He had double-digit steals. I think he had 16 steals last year. But to me, that's probably one of those guys. And again, I'm not a scout.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that steals are opportunistic and a manager, you know, organizational decision sometimes.
Well,
he could probably steal 10 bags in a year, but I don't think that's going to be a big part
of
it. He's
got a good manager for opportunistic base running.
Sure thing.
Okay.
You know, like every other runner, if he's successful, he'll be allowed to go.
Sure.
If he's not, he won't.
Absolutely.
You know who I'd like to see playing third? I really want to see Chris Coughlin coming back to the infield. That would be awesome. I have him in Tout Wars. I picked him up as a reserve pick. Mm-hmm. He's been like my best hitter so far.
Yeah.
Tells you a lot about my Tout Wars team.
Yeah. Okay. Back to some closer follies. Colorado with Troy Hawkins out. Adam Ottavino in.
I drafted LaTroy Hawkins in Tout Wars only for a buck. My third closer only for a buck. It's not like I thought I was getting Aroldis Chapman as a sleeper. I figured, you know what, he'll probably sneak his way to 20 saves and before Father Time catches up with him. He did sneak his way to 2 save opportunities, and those didn't work out. Ottavino is named the closer. 5 strikeouts in 2 innings in his first 2 save chances. Throws mid-90s. Good breaking ball. Has added a little bit of a cutter this year to keep lefties honest. If you drafted Adam Ottavino for $1, come on down and claim your prize because you probably got 35 saves out of that.
Yeah.
I don't see, you know, again, a lot can happen between now and Labor Day, but there's no reason to think we'll have that confluence of events where he's so bad to give up the role and Hawkins will be so good to take it away from him. You know, maybe Betancourt will get another vulture save here and there. Maybe Hawkins will get another vulture save here and there, but there's no reason to think Ottavino can't do this job.
All right, and finally, oh wait, sorry, 2 more things. And
next
then we'll,
to finally,
and then we'll look at some hot starts on pitchers, in the win column because it's funny, and fun, I should say. But David Wright, at least 2 weeks, obviously with the hamstring, he thinks that by going on the DL and not messing with it, he'll only have to do 2 weeks. A couple of years ago, he did mess with it, and he missed a long time. Eric Campbell, your new third baseman in Flushing, Queens. So you're not doing that to pick. I don't think, unless you're desperate.
In a lonely leagues, Campbell's worth a pickup.
That's
a
fine.
Cheap pickup because he can hit
but
a little
bit. In a mixed league, I'm looking for Moustakas or maybe Chris Bryant in a 10-team league.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the thing about Wright. You know, soft tissue injuries, muscular injuries, have a higher rate of recurrence because when they heal, there's some scar tissue and it's never as strong as the muscle, as I've learned by reading and experiencing.
Yeah.
I had Wright in 2013 in NFBC.
Like, doing surgery, like digging up cadavers and stuff like that at night?
That's not exactly what I meant. I meant by getting injured. You never
feel as
good.
Where are you going, honey? I'm going to go grave robbing and check out some hamstrings.
Where are you going with that shovel and the flashlight? You've been watching Game of Thrones too much. I had Wright in 2013 in NFBC. He was having an awesome year. He was on his way to a 2020 season or more. Pulled that hamstring running down the first base line and ended up missing the rest of the season. Remember Ken Griffey Jr.?
I remember him. I've heard of him.
He was a pretty good ball player. What undid a big chunk of his career was recurrent hamstring injuries.
Yep.
Ricky Henderson had a lot of problem with hamstring injuries. I'm really concerned about this. I'm not saying he's out for the year or he won't be able to produce when he comes back, but this really puts a damper on your expectations for him, particularly as relates to stolen bases.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
If the shoulder's good, he should be able to hit, but if the Mets don't pull him back on the base paths as a result of this, they're krizzazzle beans. You've got to protect
that
hamstring.
Does this impact where he hits in the lineup?
I still think he should be the number 2 hitter, but it is what it is.
Okay.
But I, you know, my expectations for him as far as stolen bases just went way down. Because why, hamstring injuries have a high rate of recurrence. Why take a chance?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he's Eric Young Jr. and speed is his game.
Right.
It's getting on base and hitting for power. If it means only, same with Carlos Gonzalez with the Rockies. I don't expect Cargo to be a 30-30 guy this year, but if he steals 10, I'll be pretty happy. It's more important that the guys stay healthy.
Campbell hit 5th yesterday. Went 1-for-5 with a run. Was doing well in AAA. They sent him down. He was the odd man out at spring training, and he went to and did pretty well in AAA. Again, yeah. I mean, I think if you need a utility or a corner, or the wire is so thin and you're a right owner, and you need somebody for third base, then yeah, Campbell's your guy. But otherwise, I'd be looking for Moustakas, obviously a Chris Bryant, somebody like that. Also, a hamstring problem, Carlos Gomez last night.
Yeah.
Running down the first, which is very upsetting to me because I actually have him in two leagues. This year I targeted him. I thought he had a nice potential for this year. He's waiting to see if he'll miss a couple of days or a lot. That's his quote.
That's scary. And the Brewers are off to a bad start, too.
Yeah. So, okay. If you saw it, he did it running to first. I mean, there's really nothing we can tell you. I mean, by the time you hear this, he may be on the DL for all we know. Gerardo Parra and Logan Schaefer would be the guys that would probably pick up the playing time. Schaefer actually is a center fielder. So we'll see. But, that's not good. So two hamstrings in a 24-hour period to guys that, Gomez was a hell of a lot more expensive than David Wright on draft day. But like you just said, they're both big-name players.
Absolutely.
So we'll have to see on that. So, could be a busy weekend in bidding with your fab because you got to replace Wright. You have to replace Gomez. Anybody else we have to replace? Anybody else?
Alex Rios, dude.
No, Alex Rios. Well, I just did. I picked up Jared Dyson.
I've got to replace LaTroy Hawkins as my third closer. So here's the funny
thing. Say and do the injury, Knuckles.
Just a quick note. I drafted LaTroy Hawkins for $1 in Tout Wars and picked up Edward Mujica. Mm-hmm. Figured, I'll get a couple of saves out of him mm-hmm. before Uehara comes back. I ended up never putting either guy into my active lineup. I sold Mujica for fab money to Al Melchior from CBS, who has Uehara, so he hedged that one. And I was shopping Hawkins a little bit, but I decided I didn't want to rush because I didn't want to go down to two closers until Kenley Jansen gets back. Nando made me a pretty good offer, and I said, let me just sit on this a little bit. And then 2 days later, Nando said, you should have pulled the trigger when you had the chance.
Yeah.
And so now my two closers are Grilly and Melanson. Grilly's been fantastic. Yeah. Melanson, velocity's way down. He's had a rough go so far. And Kenley Jansen keeps getting pushed back and back and back. So what I thought was going to be a strength is now turning into a little bit of a problem.
Well, and then Melanson, a couple things on Melanson, because I have him too. He brought up yesterday about release point. He didn't realize his release point, so hopefully that helps. Yeah, he got roughed up in a non-save situation against the Tigers the other day.
Against the Tigers, right.
Right, and his ERA is just ridiculous right now and all his other stuff. But honestly, I mean, when I'm going through at bat and looking at scores, I tend to go to the Pirates to the Pirates and who's my other closer? Oh, and the Astros because I have Gregerson, just to see what late innings, what's going on.
Yeah.
And these guys haven't really had too many chances.
No.
I think Melanson went in that day to get work.
Yeah.
He hasn't had any chances.
I don't think he's had a save chance.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And to be fair, his velocity's down, all the things you mentioned.
Yeah.
Three of his four outings are clean. He came back yesterday, gave up a leadoff walk after a long at-bat to Miguel Cabrera. I mean, again, no shame in that.
Right.
Then got a fly out and a ground ball double play. Yeah. So it's not like he's been ripped every single time. He hasn't been Taijuan Walker.
No.
That was
ugly yesterday.
Sorry to pull the scab off for some people. But, Melanson said, I feel fine. I feel perfectly healthy. Clint Hurdle said, we're watching it, but we're not concerned. Mm-hmm. Apparently, his velocity was a little bit down at the start of last season, and it came back. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he's Aroldis Chapman. I mean, 93 or 94, that's good cheese, but it's not 100.
Right.
So, he's
not
a guy 100. About moving the fastball, throwing the breaking ball, getting the ground balls. I'm concerned, but I'm not panicking. And saves come in bunches. He could get three in a week and be right there.
Okay. Last one, and then I want to go over these pitchers, and then we have to do Twitter questions. We got about 20 minutes here.
All right, so we'll start moving quickly.
Mookie Betts.
Oh, I love Mookie Betts.
Here's the funny part about Betts. It was all this stuff. It's just spring training is just, we just overthink spring training. But I guess we have to because there's so many storylines, and some of them do impact draft day. And this is a perfect example where it's like, is it Betts, Castillo? Then Castillo gets hurt, makes Betts a lot easier. Castillo comes back. Hits for a little bit when he first gets back. So, all right, here we are again. We know Victorino's playing the right corner. We know Hanley Ramirez is playing the left corner. They still have Alan Craig, blah, blah, blah. I don't think anything's happening to Mookie Betts. I think he's here to stay. I'm not worried about him. You probably got him at a discount because of all this nonsense in spring training. Very possible. unless two people were so high on him, you know, either in a bidding war or just reaching quote unquote a couple of rounds to get him.
Yep.
And you know, I'm tempted to cut Castillo now, a week and a half in, but I don't think this is the end of him either.
No.
The problem too is that Red Sox are playing pretty well, and they may not want to shake it up. So, you know, unless they really can get something of value for Victorino, you know, he could be blocked. But I also am waiting for Victorino to get hurt.
Right.
I think one of those two things is going to happen, and I don't think they're going to put Alan Craig in right field. I think they're going to put Castillo in right field. Would you agree with that?
Well, here's
speculating.
You know, it kind of gets back to, you know, I think you're right. They want to see Victorino hit and hopefully get, mm-hmm. you know, get a trade for him somewhere. If he's not hitting, they can play Craig, they can play Nava, they can move things around.
They got Nava too.
But we keep going back to, and Brock Holt, yeah, who keep every time he plays, he hits. You know, I keep going back to Howie Kendrick was the guy. Remember he was with Salt Lake City in AAA when he was with the Angels, and he was hitting like .385.
Yep.
I don't remember who their second baseman was, but it was nobody good.
Mariano Duncan.
Wow. Mariano Duncan. Good shout out there. I kind of get back to the mentality that with certain players, if the prospect is big enough and the production is there, the guy will make his own timeline. You know, Castillo's on the minor league DL right now, so there's no rush. But if he hits .350 for a month, they're going to have to make room for him.
Right.
So if I had a bench spot or I'm in a keeper league, I would be hanging on. I think you're going to have to be patient this one. I think it's going to play out. But Mookie Betts, you know, the two homers, three steals, running all over the place, robbing Bryce Harper of a home run. The one concern I have about Betts is the strikeout to walk rate is not where I thought it would be right now. This is a guy who commanded the strike zone in the minor leagues, and it hasn't been there yet in the majors, hence the batting average and the OBP are very low. I'm curious to see if that's just an adjustment thing for a young player or if he continues to struggle in that regard. I really want to see more walks and less strikeouts from him because that's a big part of his game.
Castillo was hitting .417.
Five, what is that, 7 for 17?
No, he was 3 for 12.
3 for 12 is .250.
No, sorry. I'm just not getting the whole thing. Sorry. .417. Right. Sorry, it was three games, 12 at bats. I'm sorry.
Oh, so, okay.
417. But now it says he's on the disabled list 7
days. Yeah. I mean, strained shoulder diving for a fly ball.
I love that 7-day disabled list. Yeah. They should bring that to the show. Let's be honest. Write a letter.
I'll call somebody.
All right. So there you go on Betts in the Red Sox outfield. Well done. So I just we were talking about Corey and I went to lunch yesterday. We went to a wonderful restaurant.
It was a nice treat.
Wonderful restaurant known as the Deli in the back of Western Beef. And I got some Spanish food. Corey got a nice sandwich. What'd you get again?
It was
grilled
delicious.
Grilled chicken. You got grilled chicken.
Lemon grilled chicken with roasted peppers, lettuce, and some Italian dressing. It was delicious.
It's a good place. I got a leg and a thigh, fried chicken. I got a pork chop. And I got some rice and beans.
Good for you.
So we were having this delightful meal, and we just started talking about pitching and drafting pitching in fantasy baseball, and I brought up Anthony Desclafani, a nice Irish kid that pitches for the Cincinnati Reds, and how great he's been. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go, after we can talk about him in a second, but I was like, I'm just going to go sort by wins for tomorrow's podcast, just for giggles. And it is pretty funny, this far in, you can't find one guy except Matt Harvey that got drafted in the first whatever. And you know what I mean? Like, that guy drafted along with the elite, I should say. Well, Teron is right there, too. So that's not fair.
But there's some interesting storylines here. I'm just going to sort of bounce around.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You know, Joaquin Benoit, he got the win last night, Wednesday night. So he's actually
3-0. Vulture!
If you cut Joaquin Benoit after the Kimbrel trade... Shame on you.
Never. I didn't.
High value short reliever.
I was just too distraught to cut him.
He's got three wins already. He might not get another win all year. He might not get another save all year, but setting up for the best closer in baseball is a nice place to be.
10 wins, 20 holds. Let's go.
All right. Speaking of bullpens, Yimi Garcia of the Dodgers.
Yeah.
All right. I mentioned a little earlier, Kenley Jansen only started throwing yesterday.
Yeah.
He's probably at least 4 weeks away, maybe 5 weeks away from coming back. And he will be the closer when he comes back. This, to me, is very different than the Detroit situation.
Apples and oranges.
But what we've seen so far is, you know, Joel Peralta's okay. You know, Chris Hatcher got a save but has been roughed up a couple of times. You know, they're really piecing it together.
Yeah.
Yimi Garcia, the thing you take from the 2-0, this has become their eighth inning guy.
Right.
And you know where the next stop is after the eighth inning, Mike.
Next stop is the closer town.
So I'm going to start stashing Yimi Garcia in some leagues where I have, you know, some deeper leagues, some bench leagues. This guy has Cheddar, he's got a good breaking ball, 10-1 strikeout to walk rate in six innings. This is a guy you're going to want to start stashing. Again, the road to fifth place is littered with closers of the future, but this is a guy who could sneak into the role. So if you've got a spot to spare, he's one to keep an eye on. You mentioned Desclafani, Shane Green.
Yeah.
Another
pitching
popular, another popular sleeper pick.
Yep.
8 shutout innings last time out. Yep. 16 innings with no earned runs to start the season.
Unbelievable.
That won't last. He's not going to have a zero ERA all year long. Only 8 strikeouts in 16 innings. But this is a guy who has good command, mixes up his pitches very well. He's like a Zach Greinke type.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm not saying he's Zach Greinke.
No, I got you.
I'm not stupid.
You ain't stupid.
But he's a guy who throws in the low 90s. Throws a lot of different pitches, has good command, who will mix it up, who will pitch backwards if he has to. You know, not everybody has to throw 95 with a wipeout slider. There are other ways to get the job done, and that's kind of the way Shane Green throws. So a lot of people were very high on him, and he's made it look good. Jake Odorizzi throwing a lot more splitters, 2-0. He's been very tough to hit so far.
Yep.
And Yordano Ventura, Julio Teheran, both of those guys are off to good starts. But here's the one. Matt Shoemaker.
Yeah.
12-1 strikeout to walk rate in 12 1/3 innings. I mean, really small sample size, but I didn't think of this guy as a strikeout pitcher. I thought last year was a little bit of an odd, fluky thing.
Well, the strikeouts are contagious in L.A. You got McCarthy, and you got Shoemaker.
Well, I hope whatever Shoemaker is getting, I hope he gives it to Jared Weaver. But, you know, Shoemaker has really been a surprise. He was a forgotten guy on draft day in a lot of leagues.
Yeah.
He was a guy that people were like, 16-4, come on, we don't chase wins. Matt Shoemaker for a dollar.
Right.
Like, whatever. He was everybody's sixth starter. Man, wins count, too.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what kind of impact.
Only 2 starts. But
Garrett Richards is getting very close. In fact,
Garrett Richards is starting on Sunday.
Sunday against Houston, I believe.
Sunday.
But they have the spot for him. It's not that Shoemaker is the fourth starter, not the fifth like he was last year.
They were using a 4-man rotation because of the off days anyway. Yep. So Richards comes back on Sunday. Get him in your line.
Exciting.
I have him in 2 leagues.
Love him.
He'll be activating.
Now, from the don't chase wins category, Ruby De La Rosa has 2 wins, but he also has a 7.15 ERA and a 1.5 whip and a 3.04 batting average against.
He's got good stuff, but he's got to throw strikes.
And then my boy Nick Martinez, who I told you the story about, I wanted him on draft day in the 16-team mixed, and he got taken when I was sitting on him in, like, you know, the 100th round. But he got cut, picked him up. I win. So it's funny. Now this is so 16-team mixed league. Pitching is very valuable. You can score a million points. It's head to head, and everybody was drafting pitchers like mad. Kershaw went 1. King Felix went 3. The second round, you know, it's like when you're in fantasy football back in the day, like 4, 5, 6 years ago, and you know the stickers are colored, so you know the position. So gray was the color of starting pitchers. So, like, when you would play fantasy football.
The whole board is gray.
Yeah, the whole board was gray, just like it was all running backs in the first round back in the day. It was, like, just all one color. I mean, so they all zigged, and I zagged. And right now I'm the highest scoring team in the league. Again, it's a week and a half, and we're almost 2 weeks in. Highest scoring team in the league. I have Desclafini. I have Nick Martinez. I have Jake Odorizzi.
Oh, my gosh.
I used the composites. And the only thing I did with them, and I think I'm pretty sure I told you this, for hitters I sorted by OPS, and for pitchers I sorted by strikeouts.
Yep.
And that's it. And I just kept crossing names off. And then when it would come to me, I'd say, okay, what do I do here? And I would hang in there. And I missed some guys, but I also missed like Matt Latos. So it all comes out in the wash.
Well, you know, the thing. Quick note about projections. We talked about this a little bit last time, and I just want to kind of wrap up the thought.
Yeah.
You know. Projections are a baseline. They're a checklist to work against during your draft.
Exactly.
But it's not if you project Anthony Desclafani for a 4.38 ERA and 127 strikeouts, you don't just pencil those stats into your projections and say, well, I just dropped into seventh place because I took it. They're a guideline. And if you think a guy is going to exceed the projections, you draft based on your expectations. This is all about. I use the projections during the draft to help me create relative rankings, to help me track things during the standings, to say, do I have enough speed? Do I have enough power? But as I go through them, the projection is objective, and I say, I don't think this guy can make those numbers, and I move on.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go 2 or 3 or 4 lines down before I see a guy who may have a lesser projection, but you know what? I'm more confident in this guy than the projections because I like the situation, I like the growth curve, whatever it may be. So we talked about Shane Green, Anthony DeSclafani. Those are just two guys that if you went 100% on projections, no one would have drafted those guys.
Right.
But there were reasons to like them, yep. And that's why a lot of people like them as sleepers. And, you know, look, after a combined four starts,
sure.
So far, so good.
Funny, but I also, I got Gary Richards coming off. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, the method to the madness is, you know, and I also drafted James Shields. It's not like I didn't draft any workhorses or whatever.
Projections liked him, too.
but real quick, so I love Cingrani. I just have a man crush on Cingrani. And I was very disappointed he wasn't going to make the rotation. Brian Price made that very clear. He wasn't going to make the rotation out of spring training. They were going to put him in the bullpen. So for the first time in my fantasy career, I handcuffed a guy from the bullpen.
Handcuffed a starter?
With a starter. I was like, you know what? I don't care. I am drafting Tony Cingrani. I don't care. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to draft Desclafini anyway, as a handcuff to Cingrani. I was just like, why not?
Is Cingrani your high pony and hoop earrings?
Yes, and black and yellow outfit. If you were watching MLB Network yesterday, the ultimate Seattle ensemble was worn by the one and only Lauren Shahadi. Just unbelievable. She was taunting me. She was taunting me. All right, let's do some Twitter questions real quick.
I wasn't going to say that. I was just saying about the pony and the hoops.
I don't care. let's do some Twitter questions, and then we'll get out of here. At Birdly 23 was offered Matt Harvey for Nelson Cruz. Ooh, power deal.
Look, Matt Harvey has looked terrific, you know, another 2-0 guy, but Nelson Cruz is pretty good too. That is a very fair offer, but all things being equal, I'm keeping the bat.
Yeah, no, me too. But that is intriguing.
I don't see any reason whatsoever that Nelson Cruz shouldn't hit 35 homers this year. I said it in February. I said it in November when I took him.
That means he's only in 29 more.
Dude, remember the slow mock draft we started in November?
Yep.
I took him in that draft. I have no fear of Nelson Cruz this year. He's going to hit 35.
All right. At Jim R. Glonke, who's the best starting pickup in a 10-team head-to-head dynasty? Oh, here's some familiar names from today. Shane Green, Jake Odorizzi, or Daniel Norris?
I would take Odorizzi because of the strikeout potential. You know, Green has been great, but I like Odorizzi's strikeout upside. He's a little bit more advanced than Daniel Norris, I think.
Yep, absolutely. Again, don't forget what I said. I sorted by strikeouts, on draft day. And these guys, you know, Odorizzi was up there. He was, I think in the projections, the composites, he was in the 180s, I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. Strikeout per inning.
Yep. At Vic Valley, or Valley.
Vic Vale.
I'm sorry. Yeah, at Vic Vale.
Sorry.
14-team keeper. I need a shortstop. Was offered Carlos Gomez, Rollins, Street, and M. Sano.
Miguel Sano.
Or Mike Ciano. Spanish Mike Ciano. For Freddie Freeman, Ryan Braun, Doolittle. What do you think? So you need a shortstop, yet we have to trade 7 guys.
That's my point exactly.
I never understood that.
Now, obviously, you have to take this one with a grain of salt because the question was asked before the potential injury to Gomez.
Yes.
So we're going
to
evaluate it with that put aside.
Yep.
And my reaction is exactly the same as yours. 14-team keeper league, you need a shortstop, and you're doing all that just to get Jimmy Rollins. Just on principle alone, I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the depth of closer, I would do Doolittle for Rollins if you can get away with it.
He's getting back, I'll give you Doolittle, you give me Street.
Right, exactly.
I'll give you Braun, you give me Gomez. You know, you don't need to do all that to get Jimmy Rollins. And that's not an insult to Jimmy Rollins, who's still a very useful player. But in a 14-team keeper league, make a deal that fits the need, not, you know, the grandiose, you know, vision.
Yep. Okay. At Jay Varbel, drop Gaussman for DeSclafini. All our boys are coming up today.
In a non-keeper league, absolutely. As good a prospect as Gaussman is, he's a middle reliever, and DeSclafini is a starter who's pitching well and should continue to pitch well. Not a 1.38 ERA well, but pretty well.
at Eric J. Katz, pick one SP to drop. Nelson, Hahn, or Green?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. We talked about Green at length. Jesse Hahn pitched fantastic in San Diego. He's in a great pitcher's park now in Oakland. First two starts have been pretty good, although the strikeout numbers haven't been great. And Jimmy Nelson was a big prospect, has introduced a spike curveball this year that the Brewers say is his second best pitch already. Mm. Like, he threw it liberally his first couple of times out, first time out. He's not afraid to throw this pitch. That really bumps him up. A lot to like about all three of these guys, but if I had to say expectations from now till the end of the season, believe it or not, I'm dropping Shane Green.
Yeah, the strikeouts, basically.
I mean, look, 0 ERA through two starts.
That's unsustainable.
You know, but it's only two starts, and look at it this way. You got the best two starts he'll have all year.
There you go.
At MNLindy5, which side wins this trade? Carlos Santana and Drew Storen for George Springer and Drew Smyly? Huh.
Well, this would look a lot better 3 weeks from now when Smiley's off the DL.
Yeah.
But today you got to go with Santana and Storen.
Okay.
George Springer is striking out a ton.
Yeah.
You know, I made fun of Chris Carter before. I have him on a lot of teams, and I bought heavy on him this year. You know, Springer only has Carter only has two singles all year. Evan Gattis only had two singles before a ninth inning homer yesterday. Springer's striking out almost every other at bat. You know, that Astros lineup is high risk, high reward, and right now it's all the risk.
Yep. At Matt 3 Point, trade Brandon Moss for Melky Cabrera?
They're very different players. If you can give power and you need more of an average, you know, run scoring steals kind of guy, yeah, I would do that. I think Melky was underrated on draft day this year. He gets on base. He's got a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. He's going to be batting second in front of Abreu and LaRoche. That's a nice spot to be. I think he's a really nice pickup, and I think if you can afford the power, it's fair value.
All right. Just one shout-out to Big Mike. Big Mike is a fan of the show. I know he listens to the podcast because he makes mentions on Twitter that he
Active
can only
tweeter.
That he can only say if he listens to the podcast. Big Mike follows me on Untappd, on Twitter, and on Instagram. So he is one more social platform away from officially being, as the Federal Bureau of Investigation says in their guidelines, a stalker. So, Mike, let's keep it at 3.
You need to sign up for are you on Foursquare or anything?
It's just into my Untappd or whatever.
Oh, okay.
He is the definition of a guy, if that's really his picture, because, you never know. He could be catfishing me with his cigar and beer photo.
But, you know, since you're doing
Big,
it.
You know what I really want to know? I could obviously ask them, different, you know, on whatever, but I wonder where Big Mike lives.
DM me a picture.
Yeah.
Neighbor Steve, a longtime friend of the 411, we're in a couple of leagues with him now. The reason we called him Neighbor Steve is because he used to work 2 blocks from our office.
Hey guys, I'm in the area. You want to have lunch?
And right.
That was every day.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm in the neighborhood. You're always in the neighborhood.
That's like your Neighbor Steve.
Yeah, and so Neighbor Steve is in the 411 Listener League now. We got into an auction. I got into an auction league with him last year.
Mm-hmm.
Hung out, good dude. So you know the 411, bringing people together.
Yep,
that's
absolutely.
What we do.
Absolutely, and there's more to that list, of course. Then we got, than just those guys. But the Big Mike cracks me up because he always has a comment.
Yeah, the picture with the cigar is awesome.
Yeah. And then the other day I put something up on Instagram that had my Dunkin' Donut thing that I'm always walking around with my little koozie. He's like, is there Guinness in there? I'm like, I look over my shoulder.
You're like,
I have to look over my shoulder.
You're like, hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
We love Big Mike and we're just teasing, obviously.
It's 5 o'clock in the Balkans.
Okay, so anyway, that'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 for April 16th, year of our Lord, 2015, 1AB. For Corey Schwartz, for everybody that does a great job on the other side of the glass, I hope you enjoyed your munchkins. I'm Mike Ciano. We'll see you next week on the MLB.com Fantasy 411.